This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora koutou, wonderful listeners, and welcome along to episode 7 of Aratoi On Air, the show where Amy Tawa, my colleague at Creative Partnerships Aratoi Otipoti, and myself, Sean Norling, take a spotlight to all the wonderful arts and arts practitioners, organisations in Otipoti Dunedin, and have some really interesting chats.
Kia ora, I've been talking to Maya Morrison-Middleton, who currently works at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery and has a background in raranga, has worked in theatre. Essentially, we talked about her journey in her practice and her career and the different opportunities she took up and her return to Otipoti as a kaitahu artist.
Yeah, I had the benefit of having a little sneak preview on that chat you had with Maya. Such a interesting talk you had with them, and really looking forward to sharing that with our audience today.
Just one chat on the show today, and it's a really good one with Maya Morrison-Middleton. Today we have the privilege of speaking with Maya Morrison-Middleton, who whakapapas to Ngai Tua Huriri and Ngai Tahu. Maya is a multidisciplinary artist, writer and curator. Maya has a background in art history and continues her journey with te reo Māori and toi Māori. After living and working in Tamaki Makaurau for 5 years, including at the Basement Theatre, Maya returned in 2020 to Otipoti to take up a role at the local gallery Blue Oyster, which you can find on Darling Street, before taking up her current role as Public Programs Coordinator at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery. Nau mai, haere mai, Maya, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to come and speak with us here at Aratoi On Air.
Kia ora, Amy. Tēnā koe. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, kia ora, ko Maya tōku ingoa. He uri tēnei no Ngai Tua Huriri, raua ko Ngāti Kuri, and Ngai Tahu is my iwi. I grew up in Otipoti, but I was born in Ōtaki. Yeah, my whānau are Ngai Tahu from the hapū Ngai Tua Huriri, which is in Tuahiwi, North Canterbury, so my nana grew up. And we also have whakapapa to Ngāti Kuri, which is predominantly around the Kaikoura area. So I grew up mostly in Dunedin. I went to school out in Mosgiel and then also went to school at a little school called Forbury School in South Dunedin. And then I lived for a while when I was a kid in Australia as well. So my dad's side of the family is Australian. Yeah, I came back and did my final 2 years at Logan Park in Dunedin.
That's so cool. And then when you finished school, did you go straight to university?
I didn't. So when I finished school, I applied to go and study over back in Australia, studying law and art history. And I also applied in Dunedin. And I didn't read, I just didn't get the application criteria right for crossing over between NCEA, New Zealand and Australia. And so I didn't make it in on the first round in Australia, which was quite a crushing day when I got that letter back. And I was like, no, I thought I got everything right. But I didn't. So then I took 6 months and just didn't study. I actually spent a lot of time just going to exhibitions and going to gigs and kind of exploring what it meant to finish high school. And then I did, in the second semester of that year, I got offered a chance to go back over to Australia, but I decided to study at Otago. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I started off studying kind of a mixture of things, like history, philosophy, some media papers and art history. Yeah.
So it sounds like a bit of a smorgasbord of subjects, which was probably a great approach to studying, because I guess sometimes going to university, what you think the subject is isn't actually what it turns out to be in terms of studying the thing. So trialing a few different disciplines is probably quite helpful.
And I think some advice I would give to anyone who's going into study is to take your time. Like I took 6 months, but even then I didn't really know what I was going into. Yeah. I didn't know that much about university study, and I ended up changing and shifting throughout my degree. Yeah, so just take your time.
Did you have many family members who had gone through tertiary education?
No, I didn't. And I think that was part of why I didn't really know what I was going into. So when I was like a small child, like maybe 3 or 4, I have memories of going to lectures with my dad, who was studying law at the time, eating lollies and trying to be quiet. I have like like family members who are my age, like in the same generation. A lot of us have gone to university, but in the generations above, not really.
So you probably didn't have that same framework that other people might have who may be second or third generation tertiary educated, where they kind of know the structure of the institution, they know the way, even things as simple as what the marking process is and what a percentage of a, you know, assessment looks like in the wider, you know, grade point average. Things like that is probably quite hard to wrap your head around when you don't have someone leading the way for you.
Yeah, definitely. And even like, I always knew that I was interested in the humanities, interested in arts. And I mean, I could have also gone to art school equally. Yeah, I just didn't really have a clear sense of what all of that looked like, the split of disciplines and how you structured a degree. And with more time, I might have made some different decisions, but also I love studying. Like, I was such a nerd and have quite like an intense study ethic, come from a very like hardworking, you have a good work ethic kind of family.
I guess it's also really important to highlight that it's okay not to know. It's okay not to know. What are some of the arts disciplines that you have delved into?
So I've delved into a few different things. Like most recently, I've been studying at Te Wānanga o Aotearoa. I've actually been studying there off and on for the past 5 years. So I went through the toy programs there, Toi Atata, Kawai Raupapa, and I've forgotten the other name, and the level 4 and 5, which has been, yeah, amazing. And in terms of like learning environments, it's been a learning environment where I've just felt really comfortable, and it's felt easy, and it's felt like, yeah, it's just felt really a good fit. And I think part of that is because it's wrapped up in tikanga Māori, and yeah, it is about learning rather than being assessed, or yeah, it just feels like a hospitable environment. Yeah, and so that's been learning a lot of contemporary tohu Māori designs across many different forms. Yeah, and I've been slowly learning to weave mahi raranga with harakeke, and working a lot with the prepared harakeke fibre. So inside the harakeke leaf there's like a soft but very strong fibre which is called muka, also fito, kupu kaitahu. Working a lot with that, learning from friends, learning from family, friends, and yeah, if anyone knows the process of weaving of mahi raranga, it requires a lot of patience and preparation, and there is so much tikanga involved, which is all very important to the final outcome. And so it also depends how much time I have. Like, I haven't really been doing any weaving this year so far. Well, not last year, we're in a new year now. Last year, because I just my time has been split on other things, and that's okay. I'm also learning that it's okay to just focus on one thing, and then, you know, I know next year, this coming new year, I'll have more time, and so I'll be able to focus more on that and give it all of the prep that it needs.
What kind of mahi did you do while living in Tamaki Makaurau?
Yeah, so I moved to Tamaki Makaurau after I graduated with an art history BA, and yeah, really quickly left. I was so ready to just like meet new people, and also in terms of thinking about having a viable career in the arts, I felt at that time like the only place to try and get experience or get a job was in Tamaki, where obviously there's more galleries and things. Like, there's just, yeah. But I don't know if that still stands true. Like, it seems like there are lots of viable careers in the arts in Otiputi now. I don't know if that's changed since when I graduated. Yeah, I did a few different things. I had a few internships. I worked for the Auckland Arts Festival. I went into theatre, which was really interesting. And I think that's where I learned a lot of skills around production and organising, and yeah, really helpful skills that go across the arts and across like most things, really, like how you pull together a run sheet, how do you communicate with groups of people, building timelines and budgets and funding and all of those big questions, they're so helpful. I started working at Basement through a Toi Māori internship. So Toi Māori Aotearoa are an organisation, and they run these internships that are all around getting Māori into the arts industries, so into museums, into galleries, into theatres. And so Basement hosted the internship, and then, yeah, Toi Māori kind of administrated it, and then I just stayed on at Basement from there.
yeah, like obviously those skills have carried on throughout all of your different projects and practices and now as a programs coordinator. What was it like for you to return to Utiputi from Tamaki when it was 2020?
Yeah, so I returned end of 2020 after doing COVID lockdown in Tamaki, and obviously like working at Basement, it was like a whole shift of trying to, how do we think about a theatre during a pandemic? I saw a role come up being advertised at Blue Oyster. It was the public programs coordinator, and I thought that sounded like a really fun job, a really good mix of production side of things, producing events, but also working with artists and working again back in that contemporary art kind of area. Yeah, so I applied for the job and then I got it, so I moved back down. The applying for the role at Blue Oyster aligned well with this other shift that was going on within me personally and within my practice. I had just staged a play called Momohara Girly at Basement Theatre in 2018, and a lot of that was working with Pūrako Māori, Pūrako Kaitahu, and working a lot with my own family stories in a bit of a safely kind of shielded and guarded way. And when I was in Tamaki, I was working a lot with other Māori artists, collaborating, and that was a big focus. But I was ready to think about what does it mean to be a kaitahu artist. I was ready to come back and practice what it means being a kaitahu artist or kaitahu creative person here, wanting to connect with other kaitahu artists and build that community for myself.
You have worked across a number of arts spaces and with a variety of talented artists. What are some of the standout experiences you've had?
One of the standout experiences, I mean, there have been so many, but one of them has been recently for the opening of the Unutaie Unutaie exhibition over at Dunedin Public Art Gallery. It was a collaboration between Naitahu and the gallery and Te Kura Takapuni, which is the Naitahu freshwater strategy. And we had multiple talks on that day, but the standout experience for me was He Waka Kōtuia, performing in the gallery with the artworks. I think just having that vibrancy of energy and exchange in the gallery itself with the artworks, hearing them singing about the same themes in the artworks was amazing.
You began work at the Blue Oyster Gallery before joining the team at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery. What are some of the lessons you learnt during your time there?
Yeah, I worked at Blue Oyster for around 2 years maybe, and so many lessons. Lots of lessons around communication, communicating with artists, what's the easiest way, what kind of questions you need to put to artists to figure out what they want to do. Yeah, and I think just valuing things on all scales. We would have, if anyone's been to Blue Oyster, it's quite a small gallery. It's like decently sized, but you know, quite humble. And the spaces that we had there were really just the gallery, and then we had our office out the back. And so for me, thinking about hosting events, if we wanted to have, say, like a film screening or a workshop, it needed to work with what was actually physically in the gallery, like what artworks were there. Like if there was a show of stained glass artworks, I'd have to think about how people were going to be in that space. But even then, if we had, say, 12 people for a workshop, and that was a really valuable experience, that's amazing. And thinking less about like numbers and quantity, which you so often think about in a theatre capacity where you have, say, like hundreds of people filling a space and you're thinking about tickets, to thinking about those one-on-one exchanges and how much value they bring to people and to the artists and the artwork.
Now that you work at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery, can you tell us a little about your role?
Yeah, so I started there around 3 years ago. I'm the Visitor Programs Coordinator. So my role is a few different things. It's quite similar to my role at Blue Oyster. So I'm organising events, public events, that go alongside our exhibition program. And I do a range of events from early childhood age to all ages. And yeah, it's really fun. I do like a range of like creating trails and like we call them static activities, so things that aren't like an event people come to but they're interactives, and then also yeah, big events like
workshops
talks, performances, movie screenings, all kinds of things.
As a programmer, what have been some of the highlights for you?
There's so many. I really love programming for children, like school holidays. That's, yeah, I really enjoy that. And I really enjoy seeing children interact with contemporary art. One of my favourite workshops was for a show by Peter Robinson. And if anyone saw the show, it was very busy. It was like, had these big aluminium sculptures that were shaped like waka. And then there was like lots of paper and quite fragile things. It was quite hard to move around the show. And I was quite nervous leading into the school holidays because I wanted to do something, but I wasn't really sure how to bring kids into that environment and keep the artwork safe, but also make it fun for them. And I worked with Peter on creating a workshop built around these drawing prompts. So we had all these different prompts, like you had your eyes closed and you had to draw yourself as a superhero. And they were quite fast. You had like a minute to do each one, like 20 different drawings. So that was the workshop. But before the workshop, we visited the gallery and I asked all the children to line up like they were getting onto a waka. So we formed this waka and we did like a journey around the exhibition. So we went around it in a circle and looped around and then went back to the start. And then the second time I asked them to hop off the waka when they saw an artwork they liked or there was something that they found interesting in the artwork. And so we did that again and people hopped off at each different spot. And then we went around the room and I asked them to just say why they hopped off. And the answers ranged from like, I hopped off because there's a photo of a cat and I have a cat and my cat's name is Sarah or something, and you know, really sweet. And then some of the answers were like, I hopped off by this drawing because I like the texture of it. I like the texture of the lines and I like, yeah, lots of different answers. And it was so interesting and it didn't feel like we were there and we were nervous about like the artworks getting damaged or anything like that. It felt like an interesting way. And then we went and did these fun drawings.
What has being a public programmer taught you about human behavior in public spaces?
Oh, so many things. It's taught me a lot about the value of manaaki, of manaakisanga, which is, yeah, I guess already a pre-standing value, but yeah, just the importance of greeting people and yeah, how important it is to have a friendly face greeting people and letting them know what, yeah, that the space is for them and yeah, to find a seat and there's water in the corner and all of those things just to make people feel that warmth. And really, like, the gallery is for everyone. It's for the public. And I want people to come to the gallery and feel that. I don't want it to feel like a closed off or tense environment for people.
Outside of your work at the art gallery, how else do you fill your time?
So like many other people of my age and generation, I didn't learn te reo Māori when I was a kid. So a lot of what I spend my time doing at the moment is studying te reo Māori through Te Wānanga o Aotearoa, which is amazing. In the evening classes, and then we have weekend noho marae or different locations. So that's a big part of my time and it's amazing. I can't wait for a time when I have a level of fluency where I also have my evenings free. And I also can't wait for a time when the generation below me don't have to do that, like going to learning after work. And like, it's amazing. I'm so grateful, but I'm also very tired.
It's a commitment, right?
Yeah, but also I am committed and it's beautiful and it's also energizing and refreshing and amazing all at the same time. I do that. And I'm also part of this collective called Paimanu, so Paimanu Naitahu Contemporary Arts. And we organise wānaka and hui and hikoi and exhibitions sometimes. But we're a group. There's a trust, but a pretty loosely kind of growing and shrinking group of Naitahu artists, and we're all just committed to seeing Naitahu arts flourishing and exploring what it means to be Naitahu, Naitahutanga, those living ways through art.
What would you say are your biggest influences in terms of your practice?
I feel like my practice crosses so many things. Like, my work as an artist, a writer, my like day-to-day job as a programmer or curator, organizer. There are so many influences. I've had like a lot of great advice from people over the time, like lots of mentors and tuakana. Yeah, a lot of it has been around the importance of having expectations, having boundaries, setting limits for yourself, Yeah.
What brings you joy in 2025?
Oh my gosh, so many things. I like hanging out with kids, hanging out with all of my nieces and nephews. One of the big things that's been going on at the moment is that my nieces, they're 3 and 5, and so they're studying at Kohanga, or they're learning at Kohanga and Kura Kaupapa. And because I'm also on this language learning journey, we're starting to kōrero Māori to each other, and that is something that brings me so much joy. Even, you know, I'm speaking quite broken te reo Māori, and they're speaking like 3 different languages. Yeah, that brings me lots of joy.
Kids can be really refreshing, can't they, in terms of what matters.
I think
they kind of pull you out and they're like, no, but what's for dinner? I'm hungry, auntie. What advice do you have for young artists, and specifically emerging and re-emerging Māori artists?
Oh my gosh, there's so much advice to give. Big one is figure out what communication method works for you. Like, if you are an email person, that's great. Do emails, reply to your emails. If you are a phone person, it's okay to tell people, hey, I really struggle with emails. Can you give me a call? Having a meeting is always great. Like, if you are working with people on a project, I think a lot about communication and how I'm working with people. So yeah, having meetings if you need to build that connection with somebody and the relationship. I guess because I'm often collaborating with artists, and that's the big important thing for me. Enjoy what you do. Yeah, and I also think, and for Māori artists, study at Te Wānanga Aotearoa if you are an Osipoti. It's a great time.
Thank you so much, Kamahi Nui, Maya, for your time and for your insight and for sharing your journey thus far. Isn't over. And wish you all the best in your future endeavours in the new year. And you can find Maya probably in and around the Dunedin Public Art Gallery, harvesting raranga and hanging out with her nieces.
Moi ho toki, to hibernate. I've been told that while you're hibernating, the best thing to do is to listen to podcasts. If you want to check our previous shows out, head along to oar.org.nz and click on their podcast tab. There you'll find a bunch of other great programs on Otago Access Radio alongside ours. And we'd love for you to listen to some of the conversations we've had on this series. We'll see you in a fortnight's time with another episode of Aratoi On Air. Until then,
thank you for taking the time to listen to our show, Aratoi On Air. Ka kite, see you later, and be good.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.